Welcome back to the National Defense. I am so excited about this interview. You know, it's not every day you get to talk to a retired four-star admiral. You know, today's my day. Retired four-star admiral James Stavridis served 37 years in the military, was a supreme allied commander of NATO, and has a tremendous new book out. Is with us here on the National Defense. Admiral, how are you?
Doing great, Randy. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, man, thank you so much. This is such an honor, and I don't know how, with the writing and everything else you're doing, you have time for an interview, but this is quite the treat. I'm halfway through your new book, 2034, A Novel of the Next World War, and this thing is just such, you can't put it down. This is so good, and it's the year 2034. We have a female president. Somewhere after the Pence administration, a female Navy Commodore and captain, the USS Carl Levin is in operation. Incredible military stealth technology. How much fun was this to write and create this world?
You know, I've said to a lot of people, Randy, that for a book that's about a war, it was really fun to write. And it's about, as you know, a war with China, which I think, unfortunately, is not an impossibility. We set it, about 10 to 15 years into the future, because I think the trends kind of drive us that way. But I'll tell you, it was my 10th book, but my first novel. And what's really fun, and you hit the nail on the head, is creating these characters and watching them come to life. And they kind of almost stand next to your desk while you're writing it, and they want to tell their story. And that's a big part of the book.
I can picture these characters. I mean, you can almost imagine exactly what they look like and sound like. And I get a little bit lost in the characters and almost forget about that this is about the next world war. I mean, it's just so the characters are so well defined.
Thank you. It's an international cast, as you know. So we've got a Commodore of a destroyer squadron, obviously American. We've got a National Security Council staff advisor. We've got an Iranian brigadier general. We've got a Russian naval officer, a Chinese admiral. It's a very interesting international cast, and you need to do that if you're going to tell a story about the U.S. and China in this 21st century. It is it's a big, complicated story, but it all boils down to the characters who help you understand the tensions between these two nations.
Well, and I think a lot of that too, Admiral, is the fact that every character in every situation and every leader, it boils down to a decision by that individual, right?
It really does. And the book opens with Commodore Sarah Hunt. She's in command of three Navy destroyers. They're kind of clipping across the disputed waters of the South China Sea. I mean, this is happening today in
right.
real time, of course. And Commodore Hunt makes a decision to go investigate what looks like a Chinese merchant ship in distress. She uncovers something very shocking and surprising, and events kind of spiral out of control from there. I'll tell you, a lot of people have said, you know, 2034, this could be 2024. And I think that's probably, unfortunately, not impossible. This is a novel that we tried to be very accurate about.
Well, to that point, you know, when Zager and Evans did the song in the year 2525, a lot of that stuff happened way before 2525, right?
It did. And I'll tell you, we started writing the novel and had it set out in, you know, kind of 2060, 2070. And events in the real world kept pulling us back toward the present. And that's how we ended up on 2034.
Yeah, we are talking to Admiral James Stavridis here in the National Defense. And by the way, formerly, the highest ranking person of Greek heritage on this show was Debbie Matenopoulos. So you have taken over that mantle. And I give you credit. You know, the other thing that's very fascinating to me about this book, it's not written by some guy. I mean, this is written by somebody who knows the complexity of the situations that we're in all across the world, and have stood in a lot of places where these people in the book are standing, and have some real knowledge of this situation. And so when I hear you say that this could actually happen in 2024, it really gives me pause.
Unfortunately, it should. And, you know, this was a nice mix of two of us. Myself, obviously a Navy officer, went on to become Supreme Allied Commander in NATO. So had a lot of experience both at sea and at the highest levels of government. And then I have a terrific co-author, a guy named Elliot Ackerman, who's a Silver Star, Bronze Star, Purple Heart recipient from the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, also served as a CIA officer, became a White House fellow, knows Washington very well, a younger guy, but very much the ground war. So when you put the two of us together, it's a pretty complete package in terms of, yeah, a lot of these experiences are things that we have gone through or seen.
So is this also kind of a cautionary tale for us where we are right now? Are there things that could be done to prevent something like this happening?
That is the precise reason I wrote the book, was to tell a story that would become a cautionary tale. And, you know, if you think back on the Cold War, we never went hot. You know, we never actually went to war with the Soviet Union. And part of the reason was because there was this rich body of literature, both film and books, about how terrible a war like that would be. So my hope in writing 2034 is that it causes readers to stop and think about, how can we avoid this? We've got to avoid this.
I mean, do you send this out to every military leader right now in the country and say, you know, take a hard look at this? You know, hopefully there's some people that are reading this book, 2034, that are in positions to say, you know, he makes a good point here, or maybe yeah, something that's been tried to get through and resolve itself before now.
Exactly right. Somebody asked me the other day, if I could force one person on the planet Earth to read this book, yeah, who would be? It's a great question. And for me, the answer is President Xi, the leader of China. I would want him to read it. And hopefully it would have an impact on him as he thinks about, for example, China's claims of ownership of the South China Sea, this huge body of water. It's the size of half of the continental United States of America. It's a vast sea full of oil and gas. China claims it as territorial waters. We are never going to acquiesce to that. I would hope President Xi would read the book, realize that both nations are standing in danger. Let's sit down at a table and let's negotiate our way out of this. Let's not try and solve it with missiles.
And Admiral, is it a case right now, and it has this been the case that you talk about in the book, where those territorial waters, China keeps encroaching just a little bit further, and trying to make that a permanent solution?
That's exactly what's happening. And one of the ways in which they're encroaching little by little is building artificial islands. These are real structures. They're dredging up sand, they pile it on top of coral reefs, and they build islands that have military airstrips, missiles, radars, tanks, troops. They're unsinkable aircraft carriers, if you will. They built 9 of them so far, mostly in the South China Sea. And it is part of their strategy to say, we own this. They want to make it a de facto event, thinking that we are going to back down. I think that's a miscalculation on their part, and it's a dangerous one.
It's scary. It's scary to hear. Yeah. We're talking to Admiral James Stavridis here on the National Defense. And, you know, this book makes me want to go back and read all of your books, all 10 of them. I know, was your first book The Accidental Admiral? Was that the first one?
No, I did a couple books before that, but The Accidental Admiral was the story of my time as the Supreme Allied Commander of NATO, and I think is a very readable book about Afghanistan, Libya, the Balkans, piracy, cyber, the challenges of working inside a big bureaucracy like NATO. It was a very rich 4-year period. The centerpiece was Afghanistan and the wars in Afghanistan. And I like that book a lot, and I think it offers some good lessons for the world today. If I was going to recommend one other book of mine, by the way, a book I wrote when I was very young, it's called Destroyer Captain. when I was, for the first time, the commanding officer of a USS warship, the destroyer Barry, destroyer captain. And I was 36, 37 years old.
Oh, wow.
350 sailors working for me, and sailed around the world, combat, the whole deal. It was a very important time in my life. And I think if you want to understand what it's like to be on a U.S. Navy warship, particularly to be the captain of one, try destroyer captain.
Well, you mentioned cyber, and I haven't gotten to the part in this book, 2034, where you talk about the cybersecurity and the hacking. And I don't know if you do, but where we are right now with the technology and all of the interference from many countries, including China, you really had to. Did you consult somebody to find out where this could go, where this could lead to?
Randy, I did not, simply because this is something I've been engaged in and studying personally throughout my career. I started coding at the Naval Academy in the late 1970s, have always been deeply, deeply engaged with cyber. And in particular, when I was Supreme Allied Commander of NATO, we created the Cyber Security Center in Tallinn, Estonia. After I finished up my military career, I became dean of the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy at Tufts University, and we created a major there in that graduate school in cybersecurity and policy. So this is an area I know well. I know all the key players in it. And again, the cyber part of this really reflects my personal experience.
Wow. In the 70s, you were coding. I mean,
yes.
That's before anybody knew what coding was.
So. Hey, that was before almost anybody was born.
Right.
anybody you know, anyway, Randy.
Admiral, where are we right now with the cyber situation?
We are standing into danger. And the reason is kind of prosaic. It's because of the explosion of devices connected to the internet. So I'll give you a number. 10 years ago, there were 7 billion devices connected to the internet, roughly the same number as people on the planet Earth. Today, Randy, there are 40 billion devices connected to the internet.
Wow.
And that's great. I can pick up my iPhone and open my garage door. But the problem is you now have 40 billion gateways into the internet. And once you're inside, you have many different avenues you can take to try and do harm. And so with that explosion, it's harder and harder to do the cyber defense, and offense is gaining on defense. And that's why we ought to be worried about the kind of events I talk about in the book, 2034, a massive cyber attack that blinks the entire U.S. electric grid.
Oh, well, yeah, sure. And that's what everybody is afraid of. And it's kind of alarming to hear you say that we're more on the offense than the defense. Are their guys better than our guys?
Not yet. The U.S. still has capabilities that are ahead of China and Russia, the two next best countries, but they're closing fast. And in particular, I worry about not just cybersecurity, which is defending the internet, if you will, but about artificial intelligence, the ability to take advanced, what will soon be called quantum computing devices. It's a completely new way to conduct computer science, and then apply that toward cryptography and breaking these codes. That's the next big wave. And in fact, that's what my next book is going to be about.
Oh, wow. You know, and Admiral, is it to the position now where we are in this country where we don't think about those big time dangerous scenarios enough or plan for those in advance?
I feel as though we have not imagined how terrible it could be, for example, if we had a war with China. We have not imagined what it would be like if an adversary knocked out our electric grid or a significant portion of it. We haven't imagined what it would be like if an opponent used cyber to take down our financial system, our water system. All of those are real problems. But if you look backwards, we could never have imagined the Twin Towers. We could never have imagined a 20-year war in Afghanistan. We could never have imagined a pandemic that locked down our entire country for months at a time. So we're not very good at imagining the future and the challenges. And that was part of writing the book 2034, was to help people think, okay, 10 years from now, what are the chances of a war with China? They're not insignificant.
Yeah, it would be so nice to be proactive instead of reactive.
Right. Right.
For once.
And yeah, think about it this way, Randy. After Pearl Harbor, we had a big national commission to figure out how we missed it. After 9/11, we had the 9/11 commission to figure out what happened. Wouldn't it be nice if instead of having a disaster and then having a commission to figure it out, that we actually got ahead of that power curve?
Right. Right. Absolutely. And I've heard you say before, Admiral, that you you certainly understand that leadership, great leadership, a big part of that is creativity. And I think what you've brought with this book and what you've brought in your life of leadership is that creativity and the ability to imagine things bigger than they are now.
Thank you. And that is a big part of the motivation for doing this book. Plus, as we started the conversation, it's a fun exercise to think about humans and characters and how they would interact. And it's all part of storytelling, which is one of the great forms of art. And I don't claim the book is a great work of art, but we did hit number 6 on the New York Times bestseller list. And I'm feeling pretty good about
that's
it.
That's right, fantastic. Now. Well, it's a great book. And for you to create this world, that has to be so freeing for you, because obviously in the military, it's very disciplined, very matter of fact. And then for somebody to say, Admiral, just create whatever you want. That's pretty freeing.
Oh, it's an amazing feeling. I always say writing nonfiction, and again, I've written 9 books of nonfiction. It's like writing in a straitjacket. You got to get it right. You got to footnote it. You got to be very diligent about reality and the truth. In a novel, not so much.
You can kind of
splash a little paint around the canvas in a way you can't back there in that straitjacket of nonfiction. So yeah, it's been a fun project writing 2034, a novel in the next world war.
Is there some kind of an Admiral's Club that you get together and write novels? Because there are several Admiral. In fact, we're interviewing a Rear Admiral, John Babb, later on this week, and he's got, I think, 3 novels that he's written.
Did not know that. Don't know Admiral Babb. The only Admiral's Club I know of is the one American Airlines has, is their lounge in the airport. But I will look up Admiral Babb. I think I'm the first Admiral to be on the bestseller list, the New York Times bestseller list. You should ask Admiral Babb that.
I will certainly ask him that. And I want to ask him this question too. Do you go into that American Airlines Admiral Club, and does it make you mad that not everybody there is an admiral?
Yes, I go in there. And no, I'm a pretty easygoing guy. So happy to see everyone else in there having a good time at the bar.
So we had Tom Hanks on this program several times, and he had a Navy movie that came out called Greyhound. Oh, I don't know if you saw that or not.
Oh, it's absolutely fantastic. It is absolutely real, accurate. You know it's going to be well acted if Tom Hanks is in it.
Right.
But this one is just so precisely accurate in terms of the technology of the time. It's about an American destroyer during the Second World War helping merchant ships cross the Atlantic. But the battle against the German U-boats, we call that anti-submarine warfare in the Navy, ASW. It is so accurate. The tension, the fact that you can't see your opponent, you can only listen for him through your sonar, sending out those pings into the water.
Right.
And then you've got to figure out how to get a torpedo, or in this case, a depth charge on top. And the tension and the exhaustion of a commanding officer. I mentioned earlier, destroyer captain. So obviously I've been a destroyer commanding officer, and it is exhausting, and you feel deep responsibility for your crew. And I think Tom Hanks brings that out just beautifully.
Well, the next time we have him on the program, I'm going to play that portion of our interview for him, because that was the most important thing to him, was getting it right. And and he talked about just the minute details that only somebody like yourself, Admiral, would observe. And so that's going to make him feel great. That was a very good movie. Do you have another favorite Navy movie?
I have several, but my all-time favorite is the Kane Mutiny Court-Martial, based on a book of the same name by Herman Wouk. It's absolutely remarkable. I'll throw one other one out that I like a lot and was inspirational to me in terms of writing the novel 2034. It's a novel called The Bedford Incident. Bedford is USS Bedford, a Navy destroyer during the Cold War, and it's set up in the northern waters of the Atlantic Ocean, and it's about a cat and mouse battle between USS Bedford and a Soviet nuclear submarine.
Oh, wow.
And it is powerful and is also a cautionary tale. The Bedford Incident film has Richard Widmark plays the captain, and Sidney Poitier, African-American famous actor, sure, Oscar winner, plays a reporter assigned to the ship, and their relationship is quite illuminating in many ways as well. It's a fabulous film. So Kane Mutiny Court-Martial, excellent, and The Bedford Incident. Those are two that I really like.
You know, you pretty much set me up for the week here, Admiral. I got several movies to watch, several books to read. But I can't wait to get back to 2034. This is such a great book, a novel of the next world war. Admiral James Stavridis, thank you so much for the time today, Admiral. And it's really appreciated.
My pleasure, Randy. Pleasure being with you, and thanks for reading the book.
And just as we close here, of course, our audience is active duty military veterans and their families. Any words for them?
Thank you for serving the country, and especially let's all remember those, I'll be parochial here, those sailors out at sea who literally can't come ashore because of pandemics, and the extra sacrifice that they are all making, sailing for months at a time, not a port call, away from their families. Our service members, our veterans, always serve the country. But if you'll permit me, as an old Navy admiral, just to say thank you to those sailors at sea.
Absolutely. Can we get you down to the Suez Canal to straighten that mess out?
Oh, my God. I think the ship has been refloated, as we would say in the trade.
Good.
And I think you'll see the canal open over the next 24 to 48 hours. But, boy, that was a really bad day for a ship captain there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Admiral, thank you so much. My best to you and your family.
Same right back to you, Randy. And thanks for your great work on this podcast, serving this wonderful military community. Thank
absolutely. You. We'll be right back here on the National Defense.